It's showtime.
Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Thunderstorm just passed through the area, but miraculously, somehow, the antiquated, rickety, coal-fried Appalachian power grid managed to stay up. So, yay, winning. Mm-hmm. And with any luck, there's nothing more in the forecast, so hopefully there won't be any interruptions of the program this evening. Fingers crossed, right? Hi, I'm Bob. It is the ninth day of July, 2020, rather a momentous day in the history of the Republic, as it turns out. We'll get into that all this evening. And you might want to take part in the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that happens in the Horn chat room during the hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, because... And I think there's a good bit to talk about today. And in fact, if you do pick out a screen name and a password, if you never have, over at the chat room tab of headon.live, well, you'll be immediately greeted by the likes of Anatole and Jimmy and Otto DeShot and Roger in Oregon and Squeaky. And Jimmy just now nodding, ouch, I got a thorn in my side, ouch. Oh, yeah, big thorns. Because... Well, I don't want to get out in front of myself, but if you've been sitting around all day saying yay, we win, well, I'm Bob Kincaid, little ray of fucking sunshine, and I'm gonna disabuse you of that in a real straight up hurry, because it's like
the rooms where those 12-step meetings take place with the sign in it that says reality spoken here.
And the reality is, the Supreme Court of the United States, well, for the most part, I think I'm on record as noting that I would not trust them with the corpse of a dead skunk. And that's saying something. But I am getting ahead of myself. Every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different because it is our subscribers who keep us on the air and have for lo these many, many years. So thanks go out to Mary Bell and James and Ralphs and Khalil, our subscribers, for the ninth day of the month over on PayPal. Thank you so very much for helping keep this all going. I cannot tell you how much I do appreciate it, because it's the only way this thing happens. We badly need new subscribers. If you're new to the program, and if you're able, not if you're just hanging on in the midst of all of this crisis and this pandemic, this Trump pandemic, this freaking plague. If you're just scrambling to hang on, you take care of you. But if you're new to the program and you like what you hear and the conversation means something to you, or even if you've just been around for a while and just thought, well, you know, other people do that. No, we need you. We really do need you, because these are going to be rough months. So we find ourselves
with a $265 fundraising goal this evening. We got, thanks to Chris in Germany's It's Too Darn Hot challenge yesterday, and some more from there. We actually managed to knock down all but $65 of yesterday's fundraising. So we're that far from being even with the middle of the week. And then we've got, you know, tonight and tomorrow to deal with. Couple of program notes. One being Agnes and I have just regular doctor's appointments tomorrow afternoon. And so there's a, you know, I'd say there's a 10% chance that there may not be a program tomorrow. But you know how I feel about not being in the studio when airtime comes. So if it is at all humanly possible to be on the air, we will. I even mentioned that chance because I've never been to the doctor in the middle of a pandemic before. I mean, all this is a routine checkup and, you know, it's a $125 cachectomy for me, just to get my prescriptions refilled. That's all this is. Because there's really not, but nonetheless, you got to show up. You got to pay the money because this is a because capitalism drives healthcare in this country. Because Merca. And Agnes has an appointment too. And we have been called and reminded of the appointment and reminded that we have to wear masks. We don't have to be reminded of that because we're actually doing it. And we've been doing it since, what, March, April? Like I said, I started out with just bandanas, and then folks like Tom and Sunny San Rafael and the Steves in Florida and Georgia, Georgia and New York, made it possible for us to have quality masks. So we'll be wearing ours. If they made full body condoms, we'd probably wear those. Even if they were a little hot and uncomfortable. But I don't know how long it'll take getting us in, getting us out. I don't think anybody's allowed to be in the waiting room. And so it's a great big question mark. And if it turns out being some sort of organizational or logistic or bureaucratic nightmare, there's, like I said, about a 5 to 10% chance that there won't be a program tomorrow evening. But I will do everything in my power to make that possible. Dave, number 11, said, I just had a Zoom meeting with my doc. What's up with your doc?
What's up with your doc?
He doesn't want to inspect things, does he? No, there will be no inspecting. And there's no mask is not coming off to look in my throat, and trow ain't coming down to look in anything else. So, no. I think it's just what it boils down to is this state in this area does not have sufficient internet infrastructure to allow for the kind of, and frankly, most of his patients probably couldn't sort out something like Zoom, and that's not me being mean. That's just the reality of where I live. So Agnes and I are full of fear and loathing and trepidation, but we'll go and do this just the same, because necessary. So that's the, and the other part of it is, you may remember a long time ago, Billable Rick started the idea of getting a new freezer in here. Well, thanks to an anonymous member of the community, we took that and our anonymous friend made it possible to do more than just a freezer. An entire fridge. And I need to extend profound thanks to our anonymous friend for making that possible. That will be delivered this weekend. And it will make a tremendous difference in the way this household runs. And we'll move on. We'll move on from there. Like I said, this pandemic couldn't have come at a worse time. We would all still be talking about the Hornin by now. It would have been a month ago. We're hoping maybe next June 5th for that. But we're part of all this is that I'm going to try to keep going, making as many repairs to this place as possible so that we can actually get through the winter, because it's getting pretty rickety. But anyway, that's the two primary announcements here on this Thorn in the Side Thursday. Hopefully, maybe we'll knock out the $265 and just go into tomorrow with no need for a community-made miracle as we move toward the, not there yet, but toward the middle of this month. Ralph saying, yay for the fridge! Yay for anonymous friend! Yay indeed. Thank you. Now, there's nothing to do but get into it. Today's Supreme Court rulings and whatnot. And in fact, if Billable Rick or Steve or both of them want to get into this conversation, they are more than welcome so to do. Flavio with a note said, you basically agree with David K. Johnston and disagree with Neil Katyal. Yeah, I saw Neil Katyal's comments today in which he declared this a great victory for democracy, and no. I mean, I realize he has occupied a lofty position within government in the past and within the legal community. But and I realize that people are saying, well, you know, Donald Trump's scared now. Well, okay. But the old balls and strikes court managed to take a fairly straightforward issue and turn it into a hot mess that will continue to torment the Republic, quite possibly for years. And as I noted on social media earlier today, when you get right down to it, the Supreme Court of the United States is more transactional than a busy strip joint on a Saturday night. It's all this for that. It's all what'll you do for me if I do for you? It's all horse trading and swapping and folks, you know, putting their thumbs through their galluses and saying, now, see here, here's what I got to have. David K. Johnston, as Flavio points out, the Supreme Court just wimped out on Trump's tax returns and handed him a political victory. A cowardly Supreme Court punted today on the criminal investigation into whether Donald Trump and his Trump Organization are major league criminal tax cheats. The decisions today are no profiles in courage or even integrity, but rather in why we need fundamental reform of our Supreme Court, which as of now is exempt from the ethics rules that apply to all other federal judges, rules that are themselves weak in the first place. Very true. But the one thing that I have not seen mentioned anywhere, maybe you did, Flavio, maybe the greater Horn Family Community Congregation saw it, and I just happened to miss it. But it's something that that I mentioned last night, and that and it would and something like this would never see the light of day. And I do not wish to in any wise verge over into Alex Jones territory. But some things are hard to avoid. Oh, wait, what's that, Randy? Oh, I'll be down to the post office for those. Randy in PA tells me there are Bugs Bunny first-class stamps coming out soon from the Postal Service. I'll definitely, I gotta have those. It would be wonderful if there was a stamp with the interesting monster. My stars. Oh, but anyway, back to the Supreme Court. You know, usually we reserve the use of this particular sound file for Mondays. We're using it today.
Hurry, hurry, hurry. Come on down to old Balls and Strikes Judicial Emporium and World of Wonders, wherein you marks and rubes, can be amazed, be stunned, and be otherwise mortified by the machinations of a gang of cynical, lifetime-appointed judges who have about as much relationship to the real world as a hog does to nuclear physics. Yes, indeed, down here at Old Balls and Strikes Judicial Emporium and World O' Merriment, having paid your admission price in the form of a vast federal budget to upkeep the Supreme Court of the United States, you can pay again as you walk along the midway, gazing at the signs that declare this way to the egress. Old Balls and Strikes John Roberts wouldn't lead you wrong, now would he? Until you find yourself having seen the egress, gone through the egress, and dumped outside the carnival grounds, only to have to pay your admission price all over again. It's all here at Old Balls and Strikes Roberts Judicial Emporium and World of Wonder and Merriment. Yes, indeed. You will not believe your eyes. You will not believe your ears. The things that this court is capable of doing. Oh, my goodness gracious. The circus has actually left town now. They handed these decisions out. They've been gone for a while anyway. And now they can duck and cover until the first Monday in October. Mm-hmm. Because, like I said, without sounding all Alex Jones, I cannot help but point out that while Trump is a beneficiary of this ruling, someone else is too. A statement came out from Deutsche Bank saying, We have remained neutral in all of this. Und we will happily comply with the law as soon as we know what the law is. Right. Of course, if they wanted to really remain neutral, they could have just turned over the documents when the lawsuit initially happened, or when the subpoena was actually served. But no. Mm-mm. They waited around until Donald Trump's lawyers could try to intervene, even though Donald Trump was not a subject of the subpoena. He's special, Donald Trump, and his skeevy, greasy, creepy, grifty, filthy family. But it wasn't all that long ago, and it was before Brett Kavanaugh got on the court. And before, I think even before Ann's boy Neil got on the court. But once upon a time, there was a fella who was known as a constitutional conservative, but who also was a swing vote. Among other things, he had preserved a woman's right to choose what to do with the workings of her reproductive systems of her body. I'm talking about Anthony Kennedy. And then lo and behold, a couple of summers ago, he said, I'm done. Enough. And retired. Whoops the baby. And that's how we got Brett Kavanaugh. Because Neil Gorsuch is sitting in the seat that should be occupied by Merrick Garland. And, sorry, I'm not going to turn into a Neil Gorsuch fan just because he voted the right way a couple of times today and voted the right way one other time. He's still a right-wing POS.
But the thing is, Anthony Kennedy quit in medias res. Nobody was really expecting it. You know, he hadn't been coughing up blood or anything. And whoops, he's gone. And then we suddenly find out that Anthony Kennedy's son was one of the principal bankers at Deutsche Bank who was responsible for loaning money to the biggest financial risk any bank was likely ever to set eyes upon. By that, I mean Donald Trump. And it was sketchy then, and it's sketchy now. Certainly did seem suspicious, and as of today is more suspicious still. Because you see, while some people are out there cheering what should have been a no-brainer opinion, namely that the President of the United States is not, in fact, above the law, you know, the only people that thought the President of the United States was above the law were the maggots and the McGanns and the J. Succulows and whatnot. The President of the United States is never above the law. Or at least not supposed to be. We have some special rules for being president. But no. No. And so there's a lot of, yay, hooray, the Supreme Court said the president's not above the law. Well, that sort of is a little too Pollyanna-ish for me. We shouldn't need the Supreme Court to declare that. And we wouldn't were it not for the fact that a mendacious criminal low-rent pissant thug occupies the White House. And so we find ourselves thrilled that a basic tenet of the very nature of the United States of America was acknowledged by the Supreme Court. And that's supposed to feel like a real big win. Well, this ain't my first rodeo. And I've seen two or three games of three-card Monty dealt in my time. And I can tell when the fix is in, when the dice are loaded, when the cards are marked, and when some of the players have a few spare aces up their sleeves.
The Deutsche Bank says it has been neutral in this all along, and we will gladly follow the law as soon as we know what the law is.
Well, the upshot of today's ruling is that in the case of Cyrus Vance, the Manhattan prosecutor, he'll be able to go back to his grand jury, and Trump's lawyers will follow him along, and they'll be there in whatever the name of the court is of competent jurisdiction there in New York City. And they'll say, Judge, we've got some. Cyrus Vance will say, oh, Judge, we got some subpoenas here we'd like answered. Judge will say, do tell. They'll say, yeah, they've been served for way over a year. Deutsche Bank, Citibank, Mazars, what have you. And Trump's lawyers will say, well, we object. And they will file an entire forest worth of trees worth of paper of horseshit, pettifogging, legalistic smoke and mirrors. which will then take months to brief and reply brief and sir rebut brief. And you know what happens in the meantime? We're into 2021.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that just funny? Yeah.
And meanwhile, Citibank and Deutsche Bank said, so we are perfectly willing to comply with the subpoena as soon as we know how we're supposed to begin to comply. And so that way, we don't embarrass Anthony Kennedy's boy. Mm-hmm. And Donald Trump doesn't have to worry about being exposed as a criminal. And even better, the statute of limitations for the campaign finance law violations, for which he is an unindicted co-conspirator, referred to as Individual One, well, those statute of limitations expire. Now, you can mark all this down. I don't even have on my tattered purple robe with the frayed appliqué moons and stars and "Will Thee Kiss Me in the Dark, Baby" written in glow-in-the-dark paint across the front of it. I don't have my magic eight ball here that has the perpetually cracked screen and always says "Answer hazy, ask again later." So I don't know that this qualifies as full-on prophecy. But I'd say that if you're a betting person, this is a pretty solid bet. As a result of the pissant way that the Supreme Court approached this case today, Donald Trump will not have to deal with a revelation of what a cheat he is, you know, proved inside the four corners of various documents. He won't have to deal with that. And so he'll be able to do just exactly what he did as he pissed and moaned all day long today. It's a witch hunt. It's a hoax. It's presidential harassment. Prosecutorial misconduct. And the maggots will nod their heads like their heads are on little spring necks in the back of a 57 Buick. Just like, yep, nod, nod, nod. And precisely nothing will happen. The Court of Competent Jurisdiction in New York City, by the way, is the Supreme Court of New York County Criminal Division. Because New York, I remember that from law school. Everybody else's highest court in the land is the Supreme Court. Supreme Court of West Virginia, Alabama Supreme Court, California Supreme Court. No, the trial court in New York is the Supreme Court. And then there's, is there, I don't know, a layer of appellate courts, and then there's the highest court in New York that isn't the Supreme Court. Because the Supreme Court's the trial court. I know. And so what'll happen is they'll argue, like I said, there'll be a national forest's worth of trees cut down to make the paper for all the pettifogging that the Trump lawyers will file, and another forest will be used for the responses. That'll go on for months. And then the Supreme Court, the trial court, will rule. And once that happens, that ruling will be appealed. And it'll go through the state court appellate system. And once it's done with the state court appellate system, it will possibly, probably likely, be appealed by the maggots to the Supreme Court of the United States. And this will be probably June of 2021 at the earliest. And that's all New York State Court. The United States District Court for the Southern District of New York has already largely been fixed. In point of fact, we know that the dirty bit of business that involved ditching the current or the recent current U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York, Jeffrey Berman. Well, that was strictly the business of Attorney General Bill Pepe the Frog Barr. And I sincerely hope that in his estate plans, Bill Pepe the Frog Barr has made plans to be buried in a scuba suit. Because otherwise he's going to become saturated from people pissing on his grave when he's finally gone. Jeffrey Berman gave testimony to the House Judiciary Committee and described in his opening statement how Bill Pepe the Frog Barr had reached out to muscle him into quitting. Some seriously sleazy business. On June 18th, 2020, I received an email from a member of the Attorney General's staff stating that the Attorney General wanted to meet me the next day at the Pierre Hotel in New York. I was not told the purpose of the meeting. Well, at least he didn't wake up with a horse's head in his bed. The meeting took roughly 45 minutes and was held in the Attorney General's hotel suite. It began at approximately 12:10 p.m. on June 19th. The Attorney General's Chief of Staff, Will Levy, was present with me and the Attorney General, but he did not speak. There were sandwiches on the table, but nobody ate. The Attorney General began the meeting by saying that he wanted to make a change in the Southern District of New York. Oddly enough, that's supposed to be the President's job, but, well, we'll put that aside. He said there was an opening in the DOJ's Civil Division created by the recently announced departure of Assistant Attorney General Jody Hunt. He asked me to resign my position and take that job, saying that it would create an opening for SEC Chairman Jay Clayton to be nominated for U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York. So you can see the gears as they turn. I responded that I loved my job and my colleagues at the Southern District, and I was thankful every day for the privilege of being part of that office. I asked the Attorney General if he was in any way dissatisfied with my performance as U.S. Attorney. He said he was not at all dissatisfied. He said the move was solely prompted by Jay Clayton's desire to move back to New York and the administration's desire to keep him on the team. Gotta wonder what he knows. He was coming from the Securities and Exchange Commission, after all, where most of his time, seeing as how the maggot regime is in charge right now, most of his time had probably been taken up playing Minesweeper on an old Windows machine. But Jay Clayton, who has no criminal prosecutorial experience that I'm aware of, had to have a job. And what better place to give Jay Clayton, with no prosecutorial experience, a job than in the Southern District of New York that still has jurisdiction over a couple of criminal cases in which the President of the United States is referred to as an unindicted co-conspirator known as Individual One. Jay Clayton, among other things, has never been an assistant U.S. attorney. Has no criminal experience at all. Zip, zilch, zero, nada, niente. So Jeffrey Berman said, I told the Attorney General that I was not interested in overseeing DOJ's Civil Division or in resigning. I said that I would leave whenever a nominee is confirmed by the Senate as set forth in the statute under which I was appointed. I asked the Attorney General why I was being asked to resign prior to a nominee being confirmed. He said it was because the administration wanted to get Jay Clayton into that position. You know, real fast-like. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. The Attorney General pressed me to take the Civil Division position, saying that the role would be a good resume builder. Really? You've been the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York and you need a resume builder? Bill Pepe the Frog Barr isn't even a good liar. And he said that I should want to create a book of business once I return to the private sector, which that role would help achieve. He also stated that I would just have to sit there for 5 months and see who won the election before deciding what came next for me. As part of this exchange, he asked if I had done civil work at my prior law firm. I confirmed that I had indeed done civil work, but that I did not want to lead the department's civil division. I told the Attorney General that there were important investigations in the office that I wanted to see through to completion. I also said that I wanted to help lead the office through the COVID crisis and get the office back to normal functioning. He repeatedly urged me to take the civil division position. And so, this goes on at length. And the upshot of it is, even though he had not offered to resign or agreed to resign, nonetheless, Bill Pepe the Frog Barr's DOJ put out a press release on the 19th of June saying he quit. At which Jeffrey Berman replied, like hell I did. Among other things, they said that they were going to appoint the U.S. Attorney for the District of New Jersey, Craig Carpenito, as acting U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York, effective July 3rd, pending Clayton's nomination and confirmation. Bringing an outsider like that into SDNY, according to Jeffrey Berman, quote, would have been unprecedented, unnecessary, and unexplained, unquote. And giving Jay Clayton a job was the last thing on their minds. Even if the rest of the country has forgotten about it, minus us, there is still a chargeable felony, or four, two substantive crimes and two counts of conspiracy, with which Nitwit Nero can be charged if we can ever just get him the fuck out of office. And that's what's at play here. Because there are a heap of messes. A heap of them. There's state court charges, potential Southern District of New York charges. And we haven't even gotten to the part where we talk about how the Supreme Court fucked the House of Representatives. Because that happened, too.
Oh, but they said he's not above the law.
Oh, that's like saying the sky's blue. Randy in PA, so if you are immune from prosecution as a Supreme Court judge, and like Judge Kennedy, you do something shady, why would you give up your seat? Well, no. It wasn't that he had done anything shady, Randy. This was the trade-off for protecting his boy. Oh, and thanks to Jeremy for jumping in this evening. We're down to 260 to go to be even with the evening. Thank you, Jeremy. Ron in Raleigh says, please explain. SCOTUS decided that organizations could deny workers access to birth control if they have strong religious or moral objections to providing said contraception. Where I'm confused is who gets to decide which moral objections meet the criteria to withhold coverage. Seems to me that the court undercuts Griswold by allowing any outfit could declare moral objections. Am I wrong? I'm asking for a fertile friend. What they pinned that to is Hobby Lobby and the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. And they said that it effectively overrides the Administrative Procedures Act, which kind of was thought to control all of this, but no, because fetuses. The court will decide which moral objections meet the criteria to withhold coverage. And the only moral objections to withhold coverage will be religious objections, religious moral objections to withhold coverage in relationship to a woman's right to manage the reproductive workings of her own body. Any others? Mm-mm. No, sorry. Because that's what that decision was about. And they are chipping away, not so much at Roe v. Wade, but they're chipping away at Griswold, which has been their goal all along. Because Griswold, not Roe v. Wade, establishes the right to privacy that makes contraception even legal. And eventually they really do, at the risk of conjuring images of A Handmaid's Tale, they really do want to go back to a muscular, vociferous, dominating patriarchy. So this is a multi-front war. And so far, Trump is winning it. And I'll go ahead and say this, and it gives me no joy to do it, but I'm, again, confident. Because I remember 2009. And I remember the myriad crimes and malfeasances of the George W. Bush administration. And I remember after Barack Obama getting in office, I remember him saying with regard to prosecuting the illegal war that W. Bush started in Iraq, I remember Barack Obama saying, "This is a new day. We have to look forward and not back." And so I guess everybody just forgot about the fact that George W. Bush was a war criminal with the blood of 1/6 of a Holocaust on his hands. You know, 1 million dead non-combatant Iraqis that got all dead because he insisted on starting a war there because Saddam tried to kill my daddy. Fuck him. We're going to take him out. And once Democrats had control of House, Senate, and presidency, suddenly it was time to look forward and not back. Now, I haven't checked with any bookies or anything, but I'd suggest that look forward and not back as a presidential statement should we manage to oust Nitwit Nero from 1600 Black Lives Matter Plaza. I'd say there's pretty good odds on hearing that phrase again. because we're all just going to want to say, phew, and put the nightmare of Donald Trump behind us, if indeed it is behind us, and just let him go off into some noisy, flatulent retirement so that he can tweet invective against the guy who replaced him. And things like tax returns and financial records and loan documents, well, they'll all seem just so so 2016 in the bright light of a newly dawning American hopefulness of 2021, if we can get rid of Trump. And that is still a gigantic if. Yeah, they definitely had to call a whambulance to the White House today. Because in a country that has passed 3 million infections, and probably has been past it for a long time if you get right down to it, in a country with more than 130,000 people dead, the President of the United States spent the day whining and pissing and moaning in all caps on Twitter, presidential harassment, prosecutorial misconduct, Obama and Biden spied on my campaign and got caught, but nothing. And he really is stupid. For the 1/100th time. What? Because he writes it that way. 1/100th. For the 1/100th time, the reason we show so many cases compared to other countries that haven't done nearly as well as we have is that our testing is much bigger and better. We have tested 40 million people. If we did 20 million instead, cases would be half, etc. All caps, not reported. Oh, Jesus. We know what took place. We've already seen criminality. What is happening? Biggest political scandal of our time. Maria Bartiromo, you're 100% correct. Maria, it is a disgrace that nothing happens. Obama and Biden spied on my campaign and got caught, but nothing. All day long. Eventually, speaking to reporters, he threw another tantrum. And, you know, they're just doubling down over there at 1600 Black Lives Matter Plaza. Kaylee McEnany came out of her spider hole. By the way, her parents got somewhere between $1 and $2 million from the PPP program. Mm-hmm. A hog will always try to get its front feet in the trough, but it's never truly happy until it's got its back feet in there too, because then it can stand lengthways in the trough and nobody else can get it what's in the trough. The slop is all that one hogs. That's why that old saying exists, root hog or die, tough hide lasts the longest. She described the Supreme Court rulings today probably more accurately than most of the so-called legal experts on CNN or MSNBC. Yeah.
And we'll honor that. Jeff.
Thanks, Kaylee. You mentioned that the court decision today was a win. It didn't sound from the president's tweets this morning that he viewed it that way. Has his thinking on it changed as he's had more time to digest?
No, the president was making a general point about deference on the principle of absolute immunity, which is the posture that the president took in court. You know, he believes there should have been more deference there. Justice Alito, citing the Harvard Law Review, made a very good point that constitutionally speaking, the president never sleeps. The president must be ready at a moment's notice to do whatever it takes to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution and the American people. And we
now bear in mind, that's not from the actual majority opinion. Kaylee McEnany is quoting from the minority dissent of two Supreme Court justices, namely, one being a convincingly and credibly accused sexual abuser in the form of Clarence Pubes on the Coke can Slappy Thomas, and the guy who wrote the thing, Sammy Bad Breath Alito, who in the course of his tenure on the Circuit Court of Appeals wrote approvingly of A, letting police strip search little girls looking for hidden drugs, and B, shooting a young fleeing black man who was a good 30 feet away from police, posed no threat whatsoever, and was known to be unarmed, and writing that it's okay to shoot that guy in the back of the head. So those are the two people who held fast to the idea that the president of the United States is something like a king and is in fact above the law. Old Balls and Strikes just couldn't bring him along and say, listen, ixnay on the, it's on the ascent day. We're gonna let him get away with it. Why don't you utshay the uckfay up? But no. No, that was something up with which Slappy and Bad Breath wouldn't put.
We wish there would have been more deference to that point of view, but it is a big win, as Justice Kavanaugh noted, that all nine justices said this needs to be remanded back to the lower court, and that, in fact, the attorney, Cy Vance, had not established his ability to secure access to those records. Instead, further proceedings are required.
Giving the opportunity for the U.S. Attorney in New York to look at those documents is no doubt not something the president is happy about. I'm wondering, in general, if after this ruling and the ruling on DACA, the ruling on LGBT rights, the ruling on the census, whether the president regrets at all his criticism of judges, in particular Justice Roberts, Chief Justice Roberts.
No, I think what the president, what has been underscored to him after all of these rulings is that, you know, we need more conservative justices on the court. I mean, that's something he's very strong about. It prompted him to say he'll release a list of more conservative justices he wants on the court. So I think that's been the big takeaway, not particularly with regard to this ruling, but with the previous ones that you mentioned.
Did you ever find yourself believing that you would ever come to the day when you hoped that old Balls and Strikes is okay? 65 years old and has a fall-down-go-boom crackhead problem? I don't mean crackhead. I mean bust his noggin. Well, we're there. Oh, that's true. Now, Lee in New York says, POTUS does not live at 1600 Black Lives Matter Plaza. The irate instigator believes his address is 88 White Supremacy Center. You cannot tell him otherwise. Mm-hmm. Kyle chiming in. He could shoot 100,000 people dead in cold blood, and I don't think he'd be prosecuted. Only this piece of shit would make himself fucking victim when 150,000 people have died during a fucking pandemic that he failed to address. Jesus Christ, I hate this fucker. Meanwhile, Kyle observes, and I agree, that Kaylee McEnany, White Power Barbie, She has since taken that title away from Tommy Lauren. She's about two sentences away from screaming Heil Trump and claiming him king for life. I think you're right. Steve in New York says, putting aside what I think of the Harvard Law Review, what a law review says has almost nothing to offer as one opinion about a legal decision. No, law review articles are acts of jurisprudential masturbation, pure and simple. Megan with a note, not this time. If I said this once, I've said it a million times. Democracy isn't a spectator sport. Get to your spectator sport. Get to your nearest voting booth and vote blue on 11-3-2020. Then, for the love of all that's sane and holy, keep bugging your representatives about the crimes and corruption of the Trump administration. Joe Biden talking forgiveness to Republicans is what turned me off on him early in his campaign, despite my living in Delaware for 22 years. The shit that happened between 2016 to 2020 needs a swift ass-kicking like no one's business. Let them know this time it isn't on the table, and if they can't, they will not, that if it isn't on the table and if they can't, they will not get your vote next time. That's how this country works. VP Biden, if lucky to win election, and especially by a mandate, needs to pull on Irish fighting boots and nominate a kick-ass attorney general in order to properly prosecute this mess. If nothing else but to tell the country this crap isn't going to happen again. I know, Megan, I know. I'm just telling you the way my busted magic eight ball says it plays. In a new Congress, all the work gets done in the first session, the first year. And so I trust we understand the speed at which Congresses move. This House of Representatives got a shitload done, and everything it got done went over and sat in a pool of blood gathering dust on Mitch McConnell's desk. Well, if we get the House and the Senate by some miracle, there's going to be an urge to say, listen, Let's do for the American people and he's gone now, so why bother? But here's the thing. All these rulings today and this notion that everything had to go back down for further litigation was a sham, a scam, a smokescreen. Because those rules will never apply to a president who is a Democrat. Never, ever. Are we clear on that? That was a creepy majority. And it was a majority only for purposes of making it look like something had happened when it hadn't. When it really, really hadn't. Yeah, Jimmy in the Great Northwest says, we need a Jack Johnson for our great white dope. Now, you remember, he got his start in professional wrestling. Where's somebody with a folding chair when you need him? But there's no way, and there's no way we find out the degree of criminality in which he was involved before the election. Just no chance at all. As to we need to look forward, not back, Scott in San Diego says the 2007-2008 housing and financial meltdown is to Obama's start in 2009 as the 2020 COVID-19 pandemic to Biden's hopefully start in 2021. Is that pretty much what's ahead? If Biden gets the presidency, his first and probably solitary task will be to try to get this country over the pandemic and back to work. another million-plus Americans filed for unemployment last month. And there's no sign of any let-up out there. And there probably won't be any let-up as long as the fuck-up-in-chief remains in office. Hey, maybe that's true. Scott says that 1/100th reference in that tweet, that's a reference to the percentage of Trump's brain that hasn't been burrowed through by those pesky spirochetes. Maybe they're down to blinking. Maybe the spirochetes are at the point where they're even blinking SOS now. Justice delayed is justice denied. Lee in New York observes, isn't there zero punishment for crimes committed if you can delay the trial until after you're cold in the ground? Why, yes. Because the Constitution contains a provision that says that a conviction will, and I think it's in the treason section, will not... Well, no, there shall be no ex post facto laws. There shall be no bills of attainder, and convictions shall not work corruption of the blood. That means that you can't take everything away from, say, Traitor Tot and Eric and Ivanka, just because their father's passed on, and it turns out that he was a 200 proof crook. I'm not sanguine, as you can probably tell. I'm not sanguine at the prospect of any justice coming out of this. But when it's eventually used on a Democratic president, the precedent's set today, well, I reserve the right to sit back and say, told you so. Not that that will be any comfort either. Because, well, it won't. But it is, as the saying goes, what it is. And so here we are at the top of the hour. We still got some more Kaylee Maganini. And there's an anonymous challenge on the table that will go a long way toward knocking out today, this evening's fundraising. It's a $62.50 anonymous pay for Bob's prescriptions challenge. It's not actually the prescriptions. It's the it's the doctor visit. That's what it boils down to. But thank you. The $62.50 anonymous pay for Bob's doctor visit challenge. Thank you. And so here at the top of the hour, it being a Thursday and all, let's check in on how the planet's doing. We've got Brad and Desi with the Green News Report. $62.50. Let's pay for Bob's trip to the doctor challenge on the table. Thank you. Thank you so much.
It's Thursday, July 9, 2020.
So, first of all, it's pumping out a tremendous amount of CO2, more than a city produces.
Siberian wildfires set a new pollution record. Atlantic hurricane season breaks new records. Trump administration approves natural gas bomb trains. Plus,
the National Resources Defense Council said that this mandate will lead to about $8.9 million in health savings between 2020 and 2040.
California mandates zero emissions trucks and buses by 2045.
All of those mandates and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
You know, obviously the forest absorbs CO2. Well, if you take away the forest, it can't absorb CO2. So this is kind of a feedback loop. And releasing this carbon dioxide into the atmosphere through the burning of these trees is actually warming the planet even more.
Cool. So in the previously frozen tundra of Siberia, we can no longer see the forest for the CO2. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, I think hurricane season started about 5 minutes ago, but it's already breaking records? What?
Yes, it actually started on June 1st, but yes, the 2020 Atlantic hurricane season is already a history maker. Washington Post meteorologists warn it is likely to get worse. The Northwest Atlantic is abnormally warm, running about 4 to 5 degrees above average, and that heat energy formed Tropical Storm Edward, which on Sunday became the earliest fifth-named storm ever recorded.
Wow.
Before Edward, Tropical Storm Dolly formed in a region where a June storm has never formed before. This week, at a station off the coast of Miami, Florida, sea surface temperatures hit an all-time high record of 92 degrees. Scientists link these warming oceans to man-made climate change.
I'm sure it'll all be fine.
The sixth named storm of 2020, by the way, will be named Faye, and that's not usually seen until September. So keep that in mind.
I will.
In Siberia, record high temperatures and drought have helped trigger intense fires for the second straight June in a row and are now setting new records for releasing carbon emissions that were also broken just last year. In 1 month, the Siberian fires have released as much carbon dioxide as the nation of Ireland does in a year.
Wow.
And a new study from Purdue University this week has found that ice on lakes in the Arctic is melting earlier than ever before, causing an increase in methane emissions, which is a more potent greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide on short timescales.
So these are all troubling, self-reinforcing feedback loops. You have the fires are burning in the forest because it's too hot, but when they burn, they release more CO2, which makes it even hotter.
Yep.
This is not good.
No, scientists say that these alarming changes in the Arctic are actually unfolding decades earlier than they had predicted.
Get it right, scientists.
And it's not just the North. The South Pole is also warming fast.
Cool.
A recent study in Nature Climate Change concludes that parts of Antarctica are warming 3 times faster than the rest of the planet.
I'm sure everything's fine.
And a new study of tree ring data finds that South America has now seen an unprecedented increase in severe droughts and extreme rainfall events since the 1960s, which the scientists, surprise, attribute to man-made climate change.
Well, you know, I've recently learned if we didn't do all of these studies, we wouldn't have all of these problems.
In politics, remember the spate of exploding oil trains a few years ago?
Oh, I do.
With legal and regulatory battles hampering construction of new pipelines, the Trump administration has taken the final regulatory step to allow shipments of liquefied natural gas by rail. Previously, federal hazardous materials regulations prohibited shipments of liquefied natural gas by rail due to safety risks. It's a move opposed by environmental groups and 15 states as unsafe because of the dangers of a possible derailment, spill, or explosion in residential areas that could be catastrophic.
I'm sure it'll all be fine.
But some good news. A new study finds that spreading rock dust on fields helps to remove CO2 from the atmosphere. It actually draws it down in a process called weathering that binds CO2 from the air. The study finds that it's relatively cheap and can also boost soil health. Scientists say that transitioning away from fossil fuels is still required, but rock dust could be another tool to help us remove CO2.
Rock dust.
Yes, rock dust. And finally, here in the United States, in another first-in-the-nation move, California regulators have voted to require all trucks and vans sold in the state to be zero emissions by 2045 and getting to half of them sold in the state by 2035. That's to reduce deadly pollution at the nation's largest port in Los Angeles and to help address climate change. At least seven other states and the District of Columbia may follow.
Cool. Donald Trump's not going to like that at all.
Nope.
For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
He's bound and down, loaded up and trucking. Are we going to do what they say can be done? We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there. I'm eastbound, just like no bandit run. Keep your foot hard on the pedal.
Lord, I remember that song. I remember that. I remember that music. Jerry Reed, Eastbound and Down from what? Smokey and the Bandit? Yeah. So we are into the second hour of the program, and, you know, the hits just keep on coming.
The only way they don't want to open schools, the only way they don't want to let the schools reopen is to hurt my reelection chances.
And we can't get through the evening without noting that there was a, oh, there was another Supreme Court ruling today. Ann's boy, Neil, sided with Ginsburg and Sotomayor and Kagan and Breyer to tell the Muskogee tribe of Oklahoma that they probably own about half of that state. This, in turn, caused anointed booger-eating future king of America, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, to have a meltdown. Neil Gorsuch and the four liberal justices just gave away half of Oklahoma, literally. Manhattan's next! Last I checked in on anointed booger-eating future king of America, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, whose daddy forgot to become an American for a really long time, he was decrying New York values. So what does he care? It was a law enforcement case, and it had to do with a guy who had been tried and sentenced for rape to something like 1,000 years. But he appealed, saying that the conviction was invalid because it was Indian land because of an 1866 treaty. And Gorsuch, who comes from out west, he's from Colorado, sided with the indigenous, with the Muskogee, the Creek tribe, and said that Congress had never, because of course the Maggot administration said, that treaty was dissolved, which necessitated some digging through some dust covered records and so forth, and Nope. Back then, they just figured white folks could move on to Indian land and take it and to hell with it, and that they didn't have to bother with any niceties like dissolving treaties. So we actually honored a treaty with Native Americans for a change. One individual responding to Cruz's Manhattan is Next tweet said, imagine coming out against a decision which respects the treaty rights of a tribe that suffered on the Trail of Tears. Yeah. And the funniest part of it all was a quote from the confirmation hearings for Ann's boy, Neil, when Rafaelito declared that Gorsuch of his nomination that it has super legitimacy. Another individual said, meet Ted. Ted likes Manifest Destiny. Ted likes letting white people keep things that didn't really belong to them in the first place. Ted really doesn't like brown people. Ted's a dick. Don't be a dick. Don't be Ted. But it has some significant... It's not like the Muskogee are going to start going through the streets of Tulsa. But the fact that it's Tulsa is, in fact, more than a little bit ironic. Given the recent anniversary of the Tulsa massacre and the Coronapalooza in Tulsa. And now it turns out that the Muskogee may actually own Tulsa. But again, it's the case is with regard to law enforcement. And for a master debater who graduated from Harvard Law like Rafaelito Cruz to say that Manhattan is next, that's kind of stupid. Because it really doesn't give away half of Oklahoma to the Muskogee or the other native tribes there that were resettled in that vast and dusty, windswept hellhole. No, it simply says that the man may get a new trial. Manhattan's next, another reason that Cruz was wrong. Lee points out, settlers actually paid for Manhattan. Well, that's a little sketchier than you might know, Lee, but I get your meaning. But that would be on the Dutch, not on Merca. Interesting, though. Interesting. A law professor article coming along, Flavio sending it. Josh Chaffetz of the Georgetown Law Center says, don't be fooled. Trump is a winner in the Supreme Court tax case. His taxes will probably not become public before the election. And that is what he most cares about. Today's wins for President Trump and Chief Justice Roberts should make one thing very clear. Whatever mechanisms Congress does choose to buttress its crucial oversight role, it certainly cannot count on the courts to help out. Because the House subpoena should have been a slam dunk. It wasn't. Instead, the fix was in. All right, let's go over and check in with Scott in San Diego. Hey, Scott.
Happy Thursday, Bob.
Such as it is.
Yes, I'll have to check with my friend Pat in Tulsa and find out whether he's going to lose his house or whether all of Tulsa is going to. Boy, it should be interesting. I personally, for a long time, have been a strong advocate for hitting a big, giant red reset button and let the rights, mineral and otherwise, and land, et cetera, let all the rights revert to the Native Americans and give a nice cut to the black folks who were forcibly imported into this country. And while we're at it, let's offer the women in America and the world a seat at the table. And just revert all the rights via that reset button and let them have at it. I mean, between the Native Americans, the black folks, and the women, certainly they could come out with a better outcome than we've managed in, what, 240-some-odd years of white man rule, rich, old, nasty,
244.
Racist white man rule. Yeah, come on. Come on. It's, you know, now is the time for bold plans. And as far as Trump waiting until 2021 for any of the shit to really come out and do any lasting damage. Think back to after Nixon left in August of 74. There were cases surrounding him in the realm of taxes and other things. I mean, he had left San Clemente and moved to Red Bank, New Jersey, I think he ended up at, you know, into the 70s, 80s even, before some of those things were finally ultimately settled. So, you know, I think Trump will die before a lot of this shit gets handled, you know, comes to a conclusion. But that's just me. What do I know?
Well, I don't know what kind of conclusion we can expect, Scott.
Well,
I think there may be some deal making in the background, because of course, sure, even if he resigned, Mike Pencilneck Geek can't pardon Trump for state level crimes.
Right. Oh yeah, the things are still viable in New York, which I'm sure is part of the reason he changed his official residence to Florida a year or so ago.
Doesn't change the state of the law.
No, that's true, but you know, there would be a matter of extradition. God, I don't even want to go down that road. I just want to get off of this road. It's what I want. I want November to get here, and I want Biden to win resoundingly, unquestionably, and I want gains in the House and Democrats to retake the Senate, and that won't be the big red reset switch come January, but it'll be a start. But as far as addressing any of the shit of the Trump era, well, we'll, like I said in my email, we'll be in the same, Biden will be in the same place in January of 2021 as Obama was in January of 2009. There will be so much shit already present to clean up and to work through as a residue of 8 years of Bush. There'll be twice as much, three times as much fucking residue. And
this is why I keep trying to tell people, this is why I keep saying that what is coming is the work of a generation or more.
Oh, yeah. Well, look back. Play the archives. I've been saying that. We've got a cleanup job that dates back to probably the 80s and maybe the 70s. Of all the shit that was left undone during...
I know, Scott, but I mean, just Trump is a generation.
Oh, I know. And I just don't know if we're up for it or up to it. Or what sort of capacity and resources will we have should we make it to January of 2021 with a new president and a better Congress? I don't know, man.
Nor do I.
Let me take a quick sip of coffee. Hang on.
Yeah, okay.
Ah, great coffee. And you know why I did that?
Why is that?
To make room in the cup to pour some more. I'm just a coffee drinking fool today.
It's a wonder to me that you ever sleep.
Oh God, yeah, I sleep like an innocent babe, as hard as that is to believe. Let me get this.
But what I was getting at earlier is, you know, it's possible that between, and I'm really doing some hope in one hand and in the other and see which one fills up first here, but if New York sat down with the whole idea being get him to resign, let Pence become president, in promise for A, Pence, what the hell's going on in there?
I was rinsing off my spoon.
Really, save the spoon rinsing, Scott. It'll be okay. That little ring that forms in the well of the spoon will come. It'll wipe up just fine.
But at least I wasn't peeing, Bob.
Well, that's a win.
Give me credit for that.
That's a win. But you know, Pence pardons him for federal crimes, and I don't know. Letitia James in New York signs off on saying we won't prosecute him in New York. That might be enough to get him to go away, but I doubt it.
Is that the best course, though? Because we're still stuck with Pence for another few months, and God knows, you know what's on his agenda.
Yeah, I do. And in fact, he might be more competent at it. I'm talking about strictly in terms of Trump wanting to stay out of prison.
Yeah.
And well, not be tried criminally. That's really the only way that it happens. Because, you know, nobody can tell Cyrus Vance Jr. what to do or not do. But he's going to have to fight for everything he gets. And after Trump's gone, if he is gone, that's the caveat to it all. After he's gone, then, you know, how much will there be to prosecute a poor old 75-year-old man who's in poor health? If he loses and he actually leaves on January 20th, 2021, A, he won't attend the inauguration, and he'll be seen leaving with his neck in a cervical collar and sitting in a wheelchair.
Yeah,
it'll be
like a crime boss.
It'll be John Gotti, Harvey Weinstein all over again.
Yeah, something out of Goodfellas or whatever. There was a couple of films that dealt, I think it was Goodfellas, where it was this line of crime syndicate people. All in the courtroom, got on crutches and wheelchairs, like you said, the neck brace. Jesus. But we've seen this before. It so happens the other day while browsing through YouTube, I happened to watch the speech on Sunday, September 9th or 10th, I think it was, Gerald R. Ford in the Oval Room of the White House addressing the American people, announcing his justification and reasoning behind the pardon of one Richard Milhouse Nixon about a month after Nixon had left in disgrace. Okay. And I sat there and I watched that thing and Ford, God bless him. I'm sure he's was a halfway decent fellow in some respects. I mean, in terms of being a good family man or whatever, but, you know, detailing for the American public all of his justifications for pardoning Richard Milhouse Nixon. And at the time, well, that was one of the reasons that he didn't, when he ran in 76, that he didn't win over Jimmy Carter. There were other factors, but that was one of the reasons why I could have never voted for him. Okay, for pardoning Nixon. Are you kidding me? But as time has gone on, people have looked back and I've said it myself, looked back and said, well, you know, now that tempers and passions have cooled with the passage of time, maybe he did America a grand favor by not prolonging the madness of Watergate. Well, maybe he did and maybe he didn't. But if Trump were to step down or be forced to step down and Pence pardoned him, there would be screams that once again that Pence had pulled a Ford in terms of Nixon. There's no justice once you reach a certain echelon in this country. If your skin is pigmented in a particular way, and your income level is just so, and you're part of the fucking power machine and the power structure, there's no fucking justice. And anybody who tells you there is a fool. I mean, occasionally we'll get thrown a scrap. But even that, I mean, it's disgusting. The nature of what started out as a fairly good idea 244 years ago, a pretty basic sound idea that had never really been tried in quite that way before, has been corrupted and twisted and perverted and stepped on. You know, it's like cocaine coming out of fucking South America. By the time it gets to the street, it's been so fucking altered and stepped on and cut that you don't want it in your nose. You know, I'm not telling you anything new. You've been around. This is not your first rodeo. God, I got.
Well, yeah, and I'm not the only only little ray of sunshine out there. David in South Carolina stands says, talking about the future, says then 2022 comes along, and when everything's not fixed by 2022, voters put the GOP back in because they've no patience, just as in 2010.
Yeah, we've seen this before. You know, you look back over the, and see, one of the things that pisses me off most about Trump, not just the fact that he's a sleazy fucker and incompetent and inept and demented and deluded and a fool, as if that weren't enough. One of the things that bothers me so much about him is by the time he's gone, God willing, in January of 2021, it will mark yet another 4 years when progress was once again stymied in this country. And we saw it for 8 years, during Barack Obama's two terms, because part of that time he had to deal with the fucking obstructionists in the Senate and for a time in the House. So there's another 2-4 year segments where things that should have gotten handled and addressed didn't.
That's why I was saying, as noted last night, that we have to make a commitment here. We have to commit to Joe Biden for as long as Joe Biden can be president, and then we commit to his vice presidential nominee as a two-term Democratic president, because that would be 12 years with Republicans not in the White House. That would give us a start. That would give us a chance.
Well, go back to FDR. He was president from 33 to 45, and then Truman filled out the rest of his term plus a term of his own. It wasn't until 52 when Eisenhower and Nixon were elected. America needed that span of time, the Roosevelt-Truman period, flaws and all, to undo or start to undo many of the problems brought about by Calvin Coolidge and Herbert Hoover.
Hubert Hoover.
Think back. Hubert Hoover. And now, ladies and gentlemen, from the White House in Washington, the President of the United States, Hubert Hoover.
One of the first and earliest great radio bloopers.
Harry Von Zell. They're on YouTube someplace. There is a video of the Tom Snyder Show that used to run on NBC after the Tonight Show.
The Tomorrow Show.
Johnny Carson. The Tomorrow Show. Tom Snyder is visiting with Harry Von Zell, Don Wilson, and two other old-time announcers whose name escape me right now. And it's wonderful. If you like old-time
TV and
radio,
yeah,
I'll send you the link when we're finished. I'm telling you, it's and poor Von Zell explains the blooper, you know, and he wasn't even fully aware that he had said it right away, and he's on a coast to coast hookup, you know, feeding all of the CBS affiliates from coast to bloody coast for an important address, and he's got one job, and Hubert. So there.
Yep.
Great moments in radio, Bob. But yeah, you're right. The our work has been cut out for us for years, but we keep getting sidetracked by these four-year chunks when the opposition and obstructionists They don't want change to occur. They don't want progress to occur. You know, they thwart it and twist it every way that they can. And if they can't do it in the Congress or can't do it in the White House, they stack and pack the court. And God help us. How many judges, federal judges, has Trump put in? Trump and old numbnuts Mitch?
No, we are slimed with them. I mean, one of the fascinating things out of the Supreme Court's decision today, and the reasoning is just twisted. There's a concept in the law called waiver. Objections not raised at trial are waived on appeal. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a passage out of the opinion today. In both cases, petitioners contended that the subpoenas lacked a legitimate legislative purpose and violated the separation of powers. The president did not, however, argue that any of the requested records were protected by executive privilege. That's kind of an important passage because typically, because he did not raise executive privilege should be deemed waived. And yet they turned around and sent it back and said he needs to raise whatever objections an ordinary person could raise, indicating maybe that he did waive it, but that's not going to stop them from arguing it.
Now, which case is that? That's because the heat is tremendous here today. Plus, there's a guy across the way with a power saw.
Well, they wrote, in both cases, petitioners contended that the subpoenas lacked a legitimate legislative purpose and violated the separation of powers.
Okay.
The president did not, however, argue that any of the requested records were protected by executive privilege.
Ah, okay. So if he didn't raise it, he doesn't get to use that later on in the process.
He shouldn't, and that is a stunning note of what in, I think, any other circumstance would constitute legal malpractice. That's why you raise all your defenses at the beginning and all your objections at the beginning. To avoid legal malpractice claims.
Yeah.
But instead, he had Jay Sekulow, the religious grifter lawyer, who is more of an ambulance chaser, rear end settlement guy, because nobody else would touch him, and he went in and made the exact argument that Trump made him to told him hired him to make.
Go in there and tell them they don't have a right to bother me.
Well, you know, Sekulow is sleazy as fuck because he was Pat Robertson's. Remember that?
Dang.
That set up. Well, first of all, the 700 Club organization tried to set up a law school in Virginia Beach, and I believe that Jay Sekulow was either a graduate or the first dean or whatever. So I mean, his bona fides are suspect to start with. If he's hooked up with fucking Pat Robertson, then you know he's sleaze from the start.
Yeah.
So it's no real surprise that he hooked up with Trump. Jeez.
And so, they'll go back in and they'll make the same specious argument. And the saddest part of it all is that the Supreme Court gave him an out. To delay when there are actually rules that there are actually rules of conduct for lawyers that say that lawyers can't file stuff just to delay the process. But the Supreme Court can do any goddamn thing it wants to.
Well, it's like I say, it is a sign of where we are at this point. The fact that Mitch McConnell was able to deride and derail Merrick Garland's rightful seat. Well, not even seat, an opportunity to go through the fucking confirmation process. That is just so goddamn sleazy, and I don't want to relitigate that adventure, but it's like in another time and another space and frame of mind, the American people would be up in arms saying, hold on a goddamn minute. We the people have something to say about this. But apparently we sat mute. When was that? That was in Obama was still president because he nominated Garland. So we're talking 5 years ago. Is that? I've lost all track of time between the era of.
Yeah, it was 2016 when Garland was nominated.
Yeah, but I mean, between the age of COVID and the era of Trump, my sense of time has been totally fucked up. I don't know how you keep things straight in terms of current events and stuff like that, Bob. I mean, and maybe that's what they're counting on, is the fact that people are so discombobulated and their attention is focused elsewhere, if it is indeed is. I mean, on Trump's side, they're focused on winning this November, you know? And they show it by showing up in places like Tulsa a couple of weeks ago, a town I used to live in, now owned and operated by the Indians, the Native Americans. But and now, what are the news reports, medically speaking? A surge in Tulsa? Well, my goodness, how the fuck did that happen?
Yeah, why didn't somebody warn somebody? Right.
Well, yeah. You know, and the people have been lulled into a state of unconsciousness or hypnotic trance or something, because there was a time in this country when the people were not so easily, you know, flim-flammed and bamboozled, you know?
Yeah.
And they would stand up and they would be heard. They would demand to be heard, and God damn it, they would be heard to speak out and take some sort of meaningful action. And they would not, you know, shut up or go away until they had A, been heard, and B, some sort of action, or at least a pledge of action, had been given. We've lost whatever fucking spine we had for the most part in this country. We have become so gullible and foolish and woefully unattentive, criminally unattentive in this country. You know, and part of the reason is if the COVID virus, if the main symptom of the COVID virus was to cause non-reception of cable or satellite or right-wing radio, you'd never hear the end of it. The people would be out in the goddamn streets saying, what the hell is this? Fix it and fix it now. But because the COVID virus only does a thing, a little thing like sickening and killing hundreds of thousands of people, maybe millions before it's over, you know, and Trump has mishandled and fiddle-fucked his way from the start when he could have and should have done otherwise, and his enablers supported him in his criminal inaction. Here we are.
Here we are, precisely.
Here we fucking are. Well, who wins the blue ribbon for a little fucking ray of sunshine today?
Well, you're in the hunt. There's no doubt about it.
I wish I had something. And this is odd for me to say. I wish I had something positive to say.
Oh, I'm positive we're in a hot mess of it. Yeah, how about that?
You can see the steam rising up off of the pile of hot mess that we're in. And I would like to think that November will change something, or at least allow for the possibility of putting a peg in it so that we can zig instead of zag, and maybe dance our way through some open space to begin planning to address what has gone unnoticed or unhandled for 40-some years. But even that, even a bare minimum start toward any meaningful addressing of these many, many things seems like a task that is totally out of our reach. And maybe that's by design. Maybe there's a certain cadre of super wealthy individuals who have planned this all along. They will capitalize on the chaos and the division because it serves to entrench them and enrich them. I hate to be a conspiracy talker here.
That's not conspiracy theory to suggest that the wealth class always figures out a way to make a buck off of whatever is tormenting those who are not among their members.
Yeah.
I mean, Jesus Christ, I read that list last night of churches that got PPP money. And then there's the Ayn Rand Foundation and Kaylee Maganini's parents who have some sort of construction business or similar bullshit. And they got it, and, you know, they got somewhere. And it's because that thing was administered in such a way to benefit Trump's base.
Yeah.
I mean, there were companies that got the money and then went bankrupt.
There's a line in the film Forrest Gump, and I forget the context, but he's talking to Lieutenant Dan, where he's telling somebody that there was a big bunch of money for something, and Forrest says somebody else must have gotten that money because I didn't see any of it. I don't know. Somebody who knows the film better can quote it better. But it's like, you know, relief money? What fucking relief money? I got $1,200, and that's no small amount of money. But that went to ongoing stuff.
Right.
And there's talk of some other injection of emergency funds.
That's all it is so far as talk. But on the other hand, Darlene in Connecticut just reminded me. Then there's my governor, make West Virginia great, big old governor Jimbo Justice, and he made bank on PPP, and he needed that like a hog needs high heels.
But the people of West Virginia are not going to, by and large, are not going to see any relief. The people of everywhere are not going to see any relief because that's how the system is designed. Anybody, any of us who are low on the scale in terms of trickle down, we never see any of the well-intentioned promises of Senator Blowhard and his colleague, Congressman Putz. We never see any of that.
No.
Because we're never meant to see it.
No, and meanwhile, we have precisely three states in the United States that are listed as on track to contain the pandemic. On track.
Where are they?
New Jersey, New Hampshire, and Vermont. That's it. Controlled disease growth is in Maine, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, Connecticut, New York, Maryland, Virginia, Indiana, Illinois, Minnesota, South Dakota, Nebraska, and Wyoming. At risk of having an outbreak, Alaska, Hawaii, California, Oregon, Washington, Montana, Idaho, Nevada, Utah, Colorado, New Mexico, Kansas, Oklahoma, North Dakota, Michigan, Wisconsin, Iowa, Arkansas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Tennessee, Kentucky, West Virginia, Ohio, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, and Delaware. And then there are the states.
Hey, look,
that,
Bob.
Then there are the states that are already on fire.
Yeah.
Arizona, Texas, Missouri, Alabama, Florida, and South Carolina. Some of the maggotiest states in the union.
Look where I'm pointing, Bob, in your mind's eye. Do you see what I see? I see a single COVID-19 virus standing, and there's a spotlight on him, and he's got a black suit on and a guitar, and he's singing. Wait a minute, what is he singing? I've been everywhere, man.
I've been everywhere. Yeah.
Jesus, H on a crucifix.
Here's a fun one.
Yeah.
Texas is, and particularly the Houston area, is ablaze, and their hospital systems are being overwhelmed. So the mayor of Houston canceled the state Republican convention because those dummies, decided that they wanted to have an in-person convention in Houston. And Houston Mayor Sylvester Turner said, nope, we're canceling it. And now the Republican Party of Texas say they're going to sue the mayor of Houston. Wait till you hear. I mean, a petition lawsuit filed today in Harris County says, Mayor Turner may not treat the Republican Party of Texas convention differently from that of the recent public protests that the mayor supported. Political viewpoint cannot be the basis for unequal treatment. Now, to be sure, just so we're clear, people protesting the ongoing slaughter of black men in this country by police were not in an arena LARPing and smollicking and grabulating and tossing amongst each other, all butthole to belly button, and hooting Trump MAGA and not wearing any masks and not doing social distancing. They were in the streets. They were outside. They were largely masked. They were doing as good as they possibly could. And it turns out they didn't spread the disease.
Yeah.
On the other hand,
unlike the Trump rally in Tulsa.
The Corona-palooza, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
And these Republicans, but these Republicans, well, that ain't fair. We want to get together in arena and hoot and smollick and not fair. They were going to pack 6,000 people.
Yeah.
into a facility in Houston. And what the Republicans had come up with by way of a compromise was to say, well, we're going to deliver the speeches by video, so none of us Republicans have to be there with the huffing and chuffing masses. And that'll let us get everybody in and out of here quick and safely as possible. So none of the somebodies were going to be there.
Yeah.
They were just going to let the rubes show up.
Down in Jacksonville, is it Jacksonville, Florida? Now, what is it that Trump wants to do that I haven't fully understood this? Now, the Republican convention, if it happens,
he wants to hold a LARPing and smollicking, personal, no masks, wallering convention in Jacksonville.
For his acceptance speech, is that as I recall? That's how.
Yeah.
That's what he said he wanted. Well, meanwhile, the Florida governor?
I want a balloon drop. I want a balloon drop. I get a balloon drop and two scoops of ice cream, a balloon drop and chocolate cake. I get a chocolate cake too.
But isn't the governor of Florida kind of dragging his feet on?
Well, at first he was all about it.
Yeah, but.
But then. But then the RNC hired a party planner that he used to work with, that he had a falling out with, because he was convinced that she was leaking stuff about him. And now he's trying to sabotage the convention because they hired her. He won't get behind it unless they get rid of her.
Well, maybe Paul Manafort will get work release, because didn't he orchestrate Republican conventions in the past, national conventions? Maybe they need his guiding hand to really.
Well, speaking of people in prison, you know that Michael Cohen went back to the joint today, right?
Yeah, I heard that. I heard that.
On the one hand, it was because he was photographed having dinner at a French restaurant in Manhattan called Le Bill Bouquet, because he just couldn't be happy sitting at home in his Manhattan freaking multi-million-dollar apartment, not being in jail.
Yeah, he gets a break from the prison chow at home, but no, that's not good enough. He's got to go down. What was the name of the joint? The French
Le Bill Bouquet.
What does that mean, Bob?
I have no idea.
Overpriced and snooty. Jesus.
Oh my! I haven't had the pâté de foie gras covered frog legs from Bill Bouquet in so long. Muffy, we must go. And so he gets, so the minute he leaves the building, they start taking pictures, the paparazzi.
Yeah.
So he gets busted because he couldn't just live with the orders of the court. But then there was a fallback position because, you know, if you're on a home release situation like that, the rules are basically what the rules are, and they can make you do pretty much anything they want to. And CNBC later reported that Cohen was taken into custody by U.S. Marshals and sent to a federal jail after balking at a demand that he agree not to talk to the media or participate with any film or book while serving the rest of his criminal sentence on home confinement, his attorney said.
Jesus.
And so Cohen,
books.
The New York Post right. reported Cohen, his wife Laura, and another couple spent about an hour chatting before they became the last patrons to leave Le Bill Bouquet around 11:30 p.m.
How do you, I heard you the other day inviting me to, once I get the Mary Trump book about her uncle, her crazy uncle Donnie, to share it with the Horn family. Do you want me to sum up chapter by chapter, or how do you want me to do it?
I don't know. We'll play it by ear. We'll figure it out as it happens.
Organ music to accompany me like an old-fashioned soap opera?
If that's what you want. I mean, if you put it in the contract, I'll have the lawyers review it.
Jesus. I thought about not getting the book, but, because the only other book on the topic of Trump that I have purchased was Bob Woodward's book, Fear, which I thought was pretty well done, but it's so outdated. I mean, that's so yesterday or day before yesterday. I really wanted to I enrich Mary Trump. I want some of the dirt. I want some of the dirt. I'll admit it. And maybe she hyped it up for purposes of publication, but it'll be fun to read it. Because we've all from time to time speculated on the wide family dynamic of the Trump clan. Fred and Mary Sr. and the siblings, Robert and Fred Jr. and the sisters, one of whom, or at least one sister who was a federal judge, for fuck's sake. I just want to, because Mary's at the holiday gathering and the birthday parties over the years, and maybe not taking notes with a pad and paper and pencil, but it's all going into her head for use later. Gotta be great. It sounds like there was an excerpt the other night where it was birthday or Christmas, and she got a like a day book, a calendar, a journal from Donald and one of his previous wives for Christmas or birthday or whatever. And come to find out it was 2 years out of date. The fucker re-gifts things, Bob. Come on.
I know.
Jesus. You know, it's like something out of a Seinfeld episode. If they tell me he double dips his chips, I'm not going to any more of his parties. Because I don't want none of his drinks.
Who knew you were on the list?
Well,
I tell you what, Scott, I'm going to make some room for anybody else that wants to jump in here. I'm glad you're there. Glad you enjoyed your coffee.
Well, that's a good idea. I was going to say, because here it is, we have one hour to go, and I've filibustered enough with my rants. God, I was on a roll though, wasn't I? Where's my Valium? I need to calm the fuck down a little bit here.
No, you might need an ampule of some of that liquid stuff so you can just jam it straight into your thigh.
Ooh. I love the way you talk.
David in South Carolina stands says, check out Noel Kassler for Donald Trump family info. He's on the Stuttering John podcast as co-host.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, and that's the guy who, you know, first hipped us to the fact that he's a speed freak.
Yeah. What is that children's medicine that adults take?
What, Adderall?
Adderall.
It's not a children's medicine. It's an ADD medicine. It's speed.
Yeah.
It's basically it's time released. I can't remember the name of the drug.
Yeah. Give me some, Bob. Give me some.
Right. Yeah. All right, Scott. All right, you have yourself a good evening, man.
Take it easy, and if not easy, take it.
Indeed.
Anyway.
Later now.
All right, see ya. Bye.
Our buddy Scott calling from San Diego. Obligatory Star Trek reference coming in from Lee in New York from Deep Space Nine. Lieutenant Chadzia Dax, as the 34th rule of acquisition states, peace is good for business. Quark, the Ferengi, that's the 35th rule. Lieutenant Dax, oh, you're right, what's the 34th? Quark. War is good for business. It's easy to get them confused. Somebody always making some money. Yep. Now, let's see here. I can confirm, says Megan. I went to 3 protests here in Virginia. Most of us had masks. We were all outside, and we tried to socially distance as much as possible, as well as have hand sanitizer on hand. I didn't see any of that at the Trump rally. And, of course, now they're finding out that the Corona-palooza was exactly what we said it would be, a Corona-palooza. COVID update as of July 9th in Vermont, courtesy of Jeremy. End of May, 988 today, 1,272. We will lose control as well. We just did well at first. We're allowing people from other spots to come here if they quarantine for 14 days once they get here. But there's nothing to enforce that mandate. Because who would want to, you know, we can't do that. We wouldn't be free if we enforced mandates or anything. And I guess in all fairness, it's time for our evening COVIDiot. This takes place not at a Costco, but in fact at a dentist's office, which makes it all the more loopy. Blonde white woman, ain't going to wear no mask while she's waiting on getting her teethuses cleaned. And it ain't legal to take her temperature at no damn dentist office.
You're going to work on my teeth, not my nose. I don't wear a mask getting my teeth cleaned.
But it's about the safety of all of our...
Fine, I'll cover my mouth. Can I go be seated now?
No.
Yeah, she puts her hand over her mouth. I'll cover my mouth. Can I be seated now?
Filling out the forms of letting us take your temperature. It's about protecting our...
You can't take my temperature. That's against the law.
All right, well, I can't...
You're not an MD.
Wait, only an MD can take a temperature? Man. These rules are getting more and more complicated.
Only a doctor can take a temperature? Son of a gun. That's going to come as a real surprise tomorrow when Agnes and I go to our appointments. I'll have to tell the CNA or the nurse or whoever that goes to take our temperature and weigh us that only a doctor can do that. I done seen a blonde woman on the social media, and she spoke with real authority.
I have a right to sue you for harassing me, the manager, and this entire company, Smile, whatever you call it, dental. I do have that right, and I talked to my attorney before I came here, too. Okay. So does he want that to happen? I've waited long enough for my teeth to be cleaned, okay? Let's get this done, okay?
I can't. They're telling me I can't see you.
Who's there?
The owner of the practice.
I want to hear him. Get him on the phone. He has to send me in written writing, too. I want to see him.
In written writing, he has to send it to her. Not in unwritten writing, in written writing. Jesus, these maggots.
You shouldn't be in the building without a mask either.
I can do what I want.
No,
I'm
you
free.
Can't.
It's not a law. It's not a law.
This is a medical law.
Call the police. Don't argue with them. Call the police. Say you have a trespasser on premises. Say that she has been asked to leave, will not leave, and let the police escort her away. Assuming, of course, that the police are willing to do that, and the sheriff isn't some sort of constitutional sheriff. As to the meaning of bilboque, it's a ball on a stick, or a ball on a cup. That old game where you have to get the top of the stick in the hole in the ball. Ron and Raleigh and Robert in Australia both pointing that out. Funny, says David in South Carolina, Stan. My doctor's never taken my temp or drawn blood for testing. He doesn't even take my BP or get my weight. Of course not. They hire people to do that. And I guess they've been doing so illegally because... The big blonde woman here, she obviously knows what she's talking about, right? Sure. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
One a day, just like the vitamins, right? Hey, Flavio.
Hey. If it hadn't been for my dentist, I wouldn't have known about my high blood pressure.
Well, apparently, according to big blonde lady here, they're not allowed to take your blood pressure. She got freedom.
Yeah, it was my dentist. She flagged it first, and then I got treated for it. Otherwise, I wouldn't have known. So, I'm very glad my dentist took my blood pressure. And, yeah, wow. Are you there?
Yeah, right here.
No, sorry. Yeah, I think COVID-19 has done a number on this country in more ways than one, right? It's also making people insane. But no, I wouldn't blame the pandemic. I think
they were nuts. They were nuts first, Flavio.
They were nuts first, you're right. I think it's... You know, we go back to the Telecommunications Act of 1996 and Fox News and Sinclair and all that. You know, I mean, no. Bill Clinton didn't do us any favors. You know that? He could have not signed that.
He was the best Republican president since Eisenhower.
Yeah. I mean, seriously. And we live with those consequences, you know? You don't see in civilized countries, you don't see Fox News or Sinclair Broadcasting or ONAN, the network that...
spills its news upon the ground.
spills his sneeze upon the ground. You don't see that because not allowed.
And somehow or another, they managed to still be free.
Yeah. Amazing. And they have a much more informed electorate. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, they have conspiracy theorists over there as well. But they don't get that much traction.
Well, yeah, I mean, consider the anti-trans movement in the UK. That's by otherwise people who otherwise consider themselves to be liberals. Geert Wilders in the Netherlands. They're all over the place, but they are not amplified, Flavio, like they are here.
They're not amplified. There you go. They don't get a bully pulpit. They get in line with everybody else, and
I mean, Jesus Christ, Tucker Carlson referred to Senator Tammy Duckworth as basically called her an idiot.
And a coward.
And a coward.
You call her a coward.
Yeah.
I read that this morning, and the coffee was all over the monitor.
I saw a meme earlier today that said, I'm not saying I despise Tucker Carlson, but I would unplug his ventilator to charge my phone.
That's how I feel about it. Yeah.
And of course, media, you know, but there are countries where media have been poisoned. The UK, the UK by Murdoch, Australia by Murdoch. Mm-hmm.
Actually, Brazil is actually, and we still have some free media, but I mean, what the problem in Brazil is that people do internet via their phones. So, you know, they get all their news on their
phone. Reading long form stuff on your phone is not good.
No. And so, you know, they get, you know, the hoaxes get amplified by WhatsApp, and WhatsApp is owned by
Facebook. Zuckerberg.
Yeah. So that, you know, the election that brought us Bolsonaro was basically, it is known as the WhatsApp election, because all the hoaxes were being amplified through people's cell phones. And everybody has WhatsApp in Brazil. I didn't even know what WhatsApp was. You know, my cousins said, don't you have WhatsApp? And no, I don't have WhatsApp. What's that? You know, I had no idea what it was. But that's why, and at least our courts are going after Bolsonaro and his gang. Brazil's courts are going after Bolsonaro and his gangs for illegally pumping advertisements through WhatsApp, you know, fake news through WhatsApp. And that's illegal, fake news. The spreading of hoaxes. Yeah, they have laws against that. Unbelievable, but they do. They don't have laws against the spreading of hoaxes here, do they? No.
No.
Everything falls under the First Amendment.
Well, everything falls under the idea of free speech, with its very narrow limitations, which may not even exist anymore. You know, you can't yell. You can't yell movie in a crowded firehouse, that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. So, and similar laws in France, you can't disseminate injurious or false hoaxes, or, you know.
Right, and you know, the first we tend to think of when we think of that giant jurisprudential fraud known as constitutional originalism, we tend to think of it in Second Amendment terms, because that's where it's been most frequently deployed. But it's also a fraud in First Amendment terms, too. Because in many ways, you can look at the First Amendment and say that from an originalist viewpoint, it doesn't work in an electronic media world.
No.
Because electronic media are too fast.
Yeah.
And there's no, and there's, you know, there's no way to manage it. And all of the all of the philosophy that we've used to bolster, you know, what it is and what it means is largely powerless against the modern dissemination of abject falsehood and stupidity, hoaxes, as you put it.
Yeah, I mean, nobody thought that this was going to be the outcome of something that potentially could be a boon for humanity, the internet, right? Before the internet, there was shortwave radio. That was my internet. I had a Grundig, German Grundig radio. And before that, I had a Panasonic shortwave radio. And Arthur C. Clarke tells a story that, you know, but again, this is from my time, our time, of this boy in Brazil that needed a medication. He had a particular disease that. And there was only this Swiss medicine that could help him, because he had this rare disease. And so the ham operators got on the shortwave frequencies, and you know, and communicated, you know, across the waves. And they got the medicine to the boy in Brazil the following morning, on the plane the next morning from Zurich. And that was a story that Arthur C. Clarke tells. I remember reading this essay, and it was really cool. You know, the world of communications. You know, radio and that was, you know, and the internet was like. Even bigger than that, you know? Even bigger than ham radio or shortwave or... And in many ways it is. It does allow a great many people access to information they did not have before. But there's no... You know, there's no curating of that information. So unless you're somebody that is educated, you don't know how to take advantage of that. It's like a kid in a candy store, right? Or maybe that's not a good analogy. But you don't have any
like a pedophile in a candy store.
Well, you don't have anybody there to tell you, hey, that's bad for you. That'll rot your teeth. Or...
No, instead, you've got a pedophile at the candy counter saying, hey, kid, come here, the first one's free.
Yeah. I mean, there's no one curating the information on the internet, and so people who are uneducated, just because they saw it on the internet...
Treat it as gospel.
They'll treat it as gospel. You know, the Bill Gates implanting you with chips via vaccination or something, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've got one of those clips a day, if not more.
Yeah,
I read story after story after story, and it seems like no matter the subject matter, there's always a statistical breakout where 33% of the American people believe something stupid. And that's the maggots, Flavio.
Yeah.
We are 66% of the country is held hostage by 33%.
And that's just not right.
It's not accidental, and it's not mathematically impossible. I've pointed to this a dozen times if I've done it once. Ken Burns did one of his documentaries on Prohibition. And what he pointed out was that Prohibition got passed as a constitutional amendment despite the fact that the vast majority of the American people did not want it. Prohibition was the product of basically one guy, one group, and their willingness to be incessantly noisy and annoying. And they won. Had it been put to a vote, it never would have happened. But because it was done by a constitutional amendment process, they were able to bring pressure politics to bear on individual state legislatures and individual members of Congress to get the necessary numbers to pass the amendment. It's kind of like something that Megan just wrote to me. What if we had some kind of constitution re-up? Could we do that? By that, I mean congressional approval for a refreshed constitution updated for the 21st century. Native Americans aren't savages, black people aren't slaves, and aren't three-fifths of a person. Voting and health care are fundamental rights for a citizen, every citizen in this country. Well, what you're talking about is a constitutional convention, Megan. And the problem with constitutional conventions is that once the gavel comes down, and we've discussed this at length on this program, once the gavel comes down, anything can happen. Because the very Constitution of the United States was done by coup. And again, what, maybe 10%, if we're being generous, of the country knows that? Maybe 10% of the country knows, Flavio, that at the time the Articles of Confederation were in force, that individual states were engaging in experiments in democracy, and democracy was breaking out all over the place, and the power people, the money people, the property people said, we can't have this. And so there was supposed to be a convention to tweak the Articles of Confederation. But once he got in there, whoever gaveled it in, Washington was president of the Constitutional Convention, but once it was gaveled in, the Articles of Confederation ceased to exist. And they started putting together the Constitution piecemeal and wound up with a document that miraculously protected the property interests of the wealthy at the expense of the non-wealthy.
Mm-hmm.
And they put in a couple of mechanisms upon the insistence of a few cranks. And so there is, Article 5 does contain the mechanism for a constitutional convention of the states. And we've also talked about this at length. And what a nightmare that would be. Because a majority of states in this country are right-wing Republican states. And they've been talking for years about how they want a constitution of a convention of the states. And they just want to do it long enough, they say, to put in a balanced budget amendment, which would be a terrible piece of legislation. It's just awful. It would mean that the country would cease to actually be fully sovereign. But the thing is, once the gavel comes down on that, say, brought to you by the Koch brothers. Once the gavel comes down on that, everything's open season. Mr. President,
I think in the enlightened age in which we dwell, we don't need that old 13th Amendment no more. And we need the 14th Amendment to be clear that it's only for people who is already in this here country. And you go from there. Mr. President, we need to update the Second Amendment to get all that well-regulated militia language out there, and we need to include bazookas. So is everybody going to have a bazooka?
Oh, don't forget the flat tax.
Yeah, we're going to have a flat tax in there. And we're going to flat out stop them uppity women from having all them abortions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the problem with that, isn't it? It's a double-edged sword or something like that. Be careful what you ask for.
Yeah, and the things that we think would fix things, the tweaks like Megan's talking about, wouldn't have a snowball's chance in blazing hell.
Yeah. We're holding on to the Republic by a very thin, by a gossamer thread. As yeah. It is.
And so, I become suspicious of our ability to fix much of anything. What we're doing is we're in that devolutionary down spiral that all empires go through. And really there's very little in the way of a way to stop it. Until it just sort of plays itself out.
I think that you're right. I mean, but I still think there's hope for the Republic. We just need to come together as a majority in a way that this country's never come together as a majority before.
Well, the best thing we have in a way of a model is to look at how much got accomplished when we sent the Republicans to the cornfield between 1933 and 1952. Or, you know, 1948 if you count the do-nothing Congress that Harry Truman complained about. Great things happened for America. Substantial improvements to the quality of life. But the minute the Republicans got back into power, they started taking it apart. Classic case in point is the National Labor Relations Act. Finally, after bleeding and dying, working people got the right to organize into collective bargaining units, unions.
Mm-hmm.
Under the NLRA. And the second that Republicans got power again, along comes Senator Taft.
Yeah, Taft-Hartley Amendment.
And we get the Taft-Hartley Act, and they've been pulling the teeth of the unions ever since.
Yeah, I was... That's the legislation that made it so that your health insurance was tied to your job.
Well, and made it so that you couldn't have massive national strikes.
Oh yeah, it outlawed wildcat strikes, right?
Yeah.
So, which happened all the time in France. I mean, it's solidarity. You know, the nurses go on strike, the doctors go on strike with the nurses.
The bus drivers go on strike, the airline pilots go on strike, the train conductors go on strike.
And
then the problem gets solved.
They compel the bosses to do what the people want, which is to have a decent wage. And I remember when I was living in France, my fascist night watchman, because the dorms have caretakers and night watchmen, you know, and stuff like that. I remember him saying, it was about the strikes that happen, you know, every fall. They just blew their wad this summer and, you know, they're protesting because they blew their money away on vacation, whatever, you know, what a fascist. And I love France. I mean, yeah, they will strike and they win. They win. They get the government to back down. They get the bosses to back down. They, you know, and it's not stress-free. I mean, people die, you know, but they will fight for their rights, you know. It's only 50 million people. I know it's a smaller country, but wow. I wish we could have that here. I think we could if we didn't have so many pieces working against that ideal, right? The Fox News, the right-wing echo chamber. You know, something could be done about that. You know, or is that toothpaste and you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube?
No, it is. The internet got corrupted by commerce. It was mm-hmm. not. It stopped being an information superhighway, and became an advertising sewer instead.
Yeah.
And what we are doing is we're kind of looking around, sort of stunned and amazed, in the middle of an evolutionary shift. We are changing as humans. Our brains were different before writing was developed. Written writing, you know, just like the woman in the video. Before writing, mm-hmm. our brains had a better memorizing ability. Because if you couldn't memorize it, that was it. It's lost. Mm-hmm. Writing comes along, and that changes things. You don't have to memorize quite so much. The printing press comes along, and it changes the written word. Electronic communications come along, and it changes the idea of books. And then the internet comes along, and it changes the very nature of the human attention span. I realize I'm old enough now to qualify as a geezer, I guess. But
you and I.
but I'm astonished when I see, you know, kids 10, 11, 12, 13 years old, and they never look up. And they have to be driven outdoors, as in, shoot, get out, go on, get. To make them go out and engage in some exercise. And I suspect, although I can't prove it, I suspect that that is primarily something you see far more in what we call the middle class and the lower classes. Because mommy and daddy got bucks, have the time and the wherewithal to get their kids out in nature and to get them into activities that keep them busy and healthy, and then send them to better schools that will continue that.
Mm-hmm.
I could, of course, be entirely wrong.
No, I mean, I have friends that have children, and they're middle lower class, and I've criticized some friends that they want to get their kids gadgets, and I'm like, why? Why do you want to do that? You're spoiling them, you know. But they got to have the latest phone, they got to have the... And we're talking working class people, okay? That will go and you know, they'll get their kids games and iPads and phones. And so, consequently, kids spend all their time is on their phones. It's like their thumb on the phone always.
And that, you know, that raises questions not just of kids, but are we forever doomed to presidency by Twitter now?
Yeah, this is ridiculous. That's the worst thing, you know, I've ever seen. I mean, you got something that was supposed to be microblogging. I never understood that. But
well, back when it was just however many few characters it was kind of like
140.
It was like compulsory haiku.
Okay.
You know, you had to really work hard to convey an idea cogently and succinctly. And then they doubled it. And now you've got massive threads that are really annoying to read because it's just, you know, one tweet at a time.
Right,
but you can't get the viewership, you can't get the clicks, you can't get the eyeballs, writing all of that over at your blog. Hell, I remember when blogging, I was literally driving home from work up US 60, listening to public radio, and listening to those wise souls talking about this new thing called blogging. Yeah. And it was what, 2000?
Yeah.
2001.
Hey, I go back to BBS. You know what that is, right?
Oh yeah, bulletin board service. And at that point in time, one of the people I was reading was Bart Kopp, who started out on the old one of those old services that wasn't AOL. But it started out as a web page called mm-hmm. Rush Limbaugh Lying Nazi Whore.
Mm-hmm.
And he expanded it and eventually went full-time with it. And it was that and Media Whores Online was brilliant. We had some friends. Oh, God, what was the name of that website? They were really good friends. One of them eventually died in a car crash. But they were a news aggregator, and they would post links to stories, and mm-hmm. they were wonderful. And I can't remember what it was, but it'll come to me 3 o'clock in the morning.
But then
it all blows up. Advertising comes along. One of the most ironic things I've seen in a while was an email I got on the Daily Kos mailing list today. And I'm so old, I remember that when Daily Kos came around, they sucked all the advertising dollars out of the room from little bloggers like Bart Kopp, who had a sizable reading audience, but a considerably less sizable advertising audience. And Daily Kos mm-hmm. came around and just sucked up all the advertising dollars on our side of the aisle. Well, today I saw an email from Daily Kos saying that Facebook had sucked up all their advertising revenue.
Mm.
And so it was almost like the chickens had come home to roost. Now, meanwhile, the guy who founded Daily Kos is a multi-gazillionaire. It became, you know, Daily Kos just became a business concern in and of itself. There were others along the way. I remember Fire Dog Lake, and that turned out
Fire Dog Lake.
That turned out to have some aspects of scam about it. At one point in time, I think they ran a pack whose sole purpose, a political action committee, whose sole purpose was to pay the executive director and a couple other people in the PAC. And they may have spent like $1,000 on a candidate somewhere. Mm. And so, you know, I'm kind of cynical and jaded about all that. And it's why the horn is the way it is. You know, and I want to thank you for jumping in the other day, Flavio. Thank you very kindly.
Hey, whenever I can, I live cheek to jowl too. So
yeah. And so, you know, we've got a matching challenge from an anonymous friend this evening to help pay for my doctor visit tomorrow. That's
very kind.
Yeah, it is very kind, and it's thus far entirely unresponded to. But that's why we work here the way we do, Flavio, because I don't think I could do this if every day of my life I had to worry about appeasing an advertiser.
Yeah.
Because that is a brutal master to have to serve. And it creates this overarching superstructure of dead weight. There's a right-wing Christian financial advisor out there, syndicated all over the country. His name's Dave Ramsey. And he was going to have a great big hootenanny financial advising convention, but it got shut down because, you know, we're in the middle of a pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
But this Christian financial advisor, Dave Ramsey, no. They're not going to take that sitting down. The Florida Marriott Hotel that was hosting them shut it down because cases are blowing up like bombs all over Florida. And so they got all mad and they accused Marriott of having a myopic take on COVID stuff. And because they didn't want people getting sick and dying in their hotel, Dave Ramsey's executive vice president, Daniel Tardy, said, "I'll spare you the details, but trust me when I say they're being immature, transactional, and irrational." And so now he's going to have his Christian financial advice convention at their own headquarters in Tennessee, where they're blowing up too.
Oh my God.
And from March forward, his company has continued to hold large in-person staff meetings and is ignoring guidance and even mandates about masks. Because he's in it to make a buck. As many bucks as he can. He's a Christian, but he can't manifest that Christian notion of I'm okay as long as my needs are met. He's just a different version. He's a prosperity gospel with graphs from the Dow Jones, the S&P 500, and NASDAQ.
Yeah.
I mean, it goes on and on, but how do we get out from under this? I don't know. Old men, says Jeremy in Vermont. I used BBS back in the day before the never-ending billing trap of AOL and unlimited minutes on a local ground line. Oh, I think some of us, yeah.
Well, it was very useful back then. I think that's what I used.
CompuServe.
CompuServe, there you go. I think that's what I used to plan trips. Because I used to use the bulletin board system to get rides. I used to use that for rides and stuff from Madison, Chicago, Milwaukee. That's how we did it. We did it online.
Sure.
the students, you know. And that's where we'd look up, you know, rides and stuff.
Ride share, things like that.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And so I guess things are nice and toasty up there. And
actually cooled down significantly. I think it's like 73 outside right now, but it was for the past 5 days, it was like in the hundreds.
That's wild. Outside.
And no, it was freak. It was like freak. And the technicians had to come and fix the air conditioner. It just froze. And the filter had to be changed, and they had to turn off the air conditioner to melt the block of ice that was on the air conditioner. Because it was just so...
That's just hateful, because there was so much water in the air, and yeah.
Yeah, because there's... Yeah, exactly. And that kind of... Well, we're in a valley, in the Mississippi Valley. And when you get that kind of heat wave, humidity wave go through, it lingers. It does. It takes a lot to drive it away. And it becomes really, really oppressive, and you don't want to go outside.
Oh, we've reached that part of the year here where even the nights are hot.
Yeah, it's just no fun. It's just like, ugh.
Oh, and the things that people latch onto. Just heard from Dave, number 11. Atari SIG SysOp here.
Yeah. Commodore VIC 20. That was my first computer.
Oh, not the Trash 80?
No, not the... No. I had VIC 64 or whatever, the Commodore 64. And, you know, with the tennis game.
Yep. Flavio, have yourself a good night, my friend. Take care. I'm glad to hear from you.
Hey, you too, Bob. Stay cool.
Trying to. Let's see. We're all the way down to 82 degrees in here this evening, so yeah, it's getting better.
Oh, God.
Yep.
All right, man.
All right, later. Our buddy Flavio calling from... Wisconsin. And Billable Rick is with us. I'm glad to hear from Billable Rick.
Hey, Bob, how are you?
I'm good. I was hoping we'd hear from you. Steve said he'll save his opinions on the Supreme Court decisions till Friday on the front porch. But
Yeah. Well, again, I think your analysis is pretty much spot on. And all this bilious horseshit that you heard on the networks. I watched CNN in the morning, and they had their legal analyst talking about the cases.
Ain't that the truth?
And, the president's not above the law. He doesn't have absolute immunity from subpoena power. We already knew that from back in the Clinton days, the great cleanest hunt, didn't we?
Yeah, that was the easy
and
part.
Nixon, hell, it goes back further. It goes back to Nixon.
Sure.
Nixon v. U.S., his refusal to turn over those tapes. He was subpoenaed for those. So it's like, you know, the Supreme Court, they could have gotten rid of this case on standing because Trump was not a named party with regard to the
precisely
Mazars and Deutsche Bank. And, you know, and usually that is what courts try to do. They try to use the... least constitutionally invasive method to dispose of cases that come before them. This was clearly a fucking punt, and Trump objected to these subpoenas, you know, in a scattershot fashion, just based on absolute immunity. He didn't make any other objections that I'm aware of to the merits of the
subpoenas. And isn't it safe to say that that objections not made at trial are waived on appeal?
Waived, yes, exactly.
And so exactly. He never raised executive privilege.
He didn't. No, he didn't.
So that's waived.
No. Yeah.
But the thing is, this wound up being a Republican, because they'll never miss an opportunity to do it. It was a Republican rat fuck of a Democratic House.
Right. It was. Yeah. And I mean, Nancy Pelosi was doing her best best to put a good face on it, but, you know, it was, you know, she didn't really seem that happy from what I could tell when she spoke today. But, yeah, I mean, again, the whole approach to Trump, it's run out the clock. I mean, that same thing happened with regard to the impeachment inquiry. He refused to cooperate with the valid request made by the House. And, I mean, you know, they were criticized during the impeachment trial for not having issued subpoenas and sought witness testimony. Well, what do you suppose would have happened then? You know, the witnesses would have objected or just not shown up. It goes to enforcement. You know, it's enforced, but the enforcement is stayed pending appeal.
Right. And you know that you know by now, Billable, that Bill Pepe the Frog Barr has said he was disappointed in the Supreme Court's ruling.
Oh, was he? Another way to look at this, too, is that maybe the Supreme Court decided to punt it back to the lower courts in the hope that they're not going to have to deal with this shit anymore, at least on the congressional side, because it'll be moot. To some extent, the subpoenas will be moot if Trump's no longer president. Maybe they're hoping the guy just gets defeated. I mean, I think everybody hates Trump, even these old line Republicans hate Trump, but they just can't help but rule in favor of him and or the Republicans. But I think, you know, deep down in their souls, if they have them, if there is such a thing, they hate the guy. You know, the guy's like, you know, I don't know. He's a piece of shit. How better can I explain him? You know, and, you know, by delaying this, at least on the House side, the House subpoenas may become moot. I mean, that would be the argument. But I would actually say I would argue it's not moot, even if he is defeated, because the House needs to know about Trump's misdeeds in order to
perform their oversight function.
And to prevent this from happening again, to basically legislate laws to prevent this kind of shit from happening again, you know? Did the House rely on the statute that basically gives the Senate Finance Committee chairman the ability to subpoena the taxpayer, the president's tax return? I mean, that statute was enacted in the wake of the Teapot Dome scandal, back in the 1920s with another.
And it's clear and unambiguous, and there's nothing in that statute that says that the House, that the committee has to do what the Supreme Court said it has to do. So
They made up a new standard.
Right.
That now has to be applied by the lower courts, and they're not going to know how to apply the standard. I mean, it's wide, wide open.
Sure.
You know?
And I hope we're forever hearing Republicans, Rick, say, a bunch of unelected black robe judges legislating from the bench. That's liberal. Yeah. We need constitutional liberalism or originalism. Well, there was no originalism in adding requirements into a clear and unambiguous statute.
No, that's legislating from the bench, as the Republicans say, right?
That's exactly what it was.
How else do you characterize it? You know, so, I mean, it's like, yeah, like you said, Bob, I mean, of course a president's not above the law. I mean, do you expect the Supreme Court to say the silent part out loud? Trump might say it. You know, as you know, I have unlimited power under Article 2 of the Constitution. Okay, he said the silent part there, but is the Supreme Court really going to say that? No, of course not. But they'll make it so. You know, there never is accountability when there's a Republican president at the helm. You know, and that's just. I mean, I'm so tired of the IYARok principle. You know, it's okay if you're Republican. Well, fuck that. It's not okay if you're Republican. If you're a fucking crook, I don't care if you're, an American independent party that somehow party member that suddenly got elected. you know, you're not, you know, you are not able to, you know, you shouldn't be able to get away with misdeeds and breaking the laws, you know? So, I mean, the Supreme Court won, the American people zero, you know? No matter what they do, Bob, it seems like they, you know, when they get involved in a
case, and it's these,
they
these, it's, it, it, up. It's some of these really sketchy 7-2 opinions or 6-3.
Yeah.
Where Gorsuch agrees to come along with old balls and strikes as long as the majority is willing to not do anything too terribly groundbreaking.
Yeah, I'm not so sure how much longer balls and strikes can you know be there behind the plate, because he's like getting woozy a lot lately. I'm afraid the guy might have something wrong with his brain, like a growth or something, Bob, that's causing, you know, that's causing him to pass out. I hope not.
Well, they went to great pains with others of his fall down go booms to say that it was idiopathic. And idiopathic is just a fancy way of saying, yeah, we don't know.
Yeah, yeah, there's no specific cause. Well, that's a problem, isn't it? Don't you think you'd want to know the cause of something? I mean, it's not normal for us to just drop down, you know, for no reason at all. But, you know, I guess somehow the private sector bailed out the Appalachians because the wasn't that Atlantic pipeline canceled?
Yep. Yeah, it was.
So despite the Supreme Court's efforts to try to screw that up, at least for now,
it wasn't worth the effort.
Off the table. Yeah, yeah. It's just too much. It wasn't going to pay off monetarily, obviously, right?
It was more economic than, and you know, they just decided that, I think what they saw was the writing on the wall that their time had run out and that they weren't going to be able to get this done if, in fact, Trump gets run out of office.
And the irony of that is that decision was made like within about a week of the decision being released, wasn't it? Decision not to go forward with the pipeline?
Yeah. It was within a week and a half of the big sellout.
Wow. Yeah, that's amazing. Well, the goddess doesn't sleep, Bob. I mean, you know, apparently all your sacrifices of the rubber chickens, you know, at
every now and then maybe they pay off a little bit.
They're working. I think we need to send you some more.
As we wrap up, you've got a question coming in from Megan. Hey, Rick, I'm studying for my paralegal certificate. Know any hints to make blue booking easier?
Blue booking easier, like writing the exam, writing your answers, huh?
I guess, yeah. I mean, that's,
well, you know, what you got to do, Megan, is you got to look at the big picture. You got to look at the hypothetical that's given to you. I assume you'll have hypotheticals just like law school. And pick out the issues, okay? Look at the legal rule involved. Try and analyze the legal rule involved and come to a conclusion, the old IRAC, I-R-A-C analysis. And just spot as many issues as you can, because the name of the game is to use a scattershot approach, you know, for exams as to, you know, if they're hypothetical situations that are thrown at you and, you know, you're asked, you know, what are the issues here and what is the likely outcome, that kind of thing. So, you know, just show your work as well. Don't just assume that the grader is going to know is going to be able to read between the lines. You've got to be pretty explicit, you know, but general enough that you're going to have time to address each and every major issue that's specified there in the questions. So,
yeah, it's the same approach. It's the same approach you take to briefing cases.
Yeah, exactly. So keep it brief, exactly, like Bob said, Megan. So hopefully
facts,
that'll help. Well,
facts,
congratulations.
I'm facts issue. Yeah, facts issue.
Yeah.
Rule of law, rationale, and holding.
Yeah,
or something
we
like
call
that.
The Iraq IRC method. So you can't go wrong that way. That's the easiest way of addressing, you know, issues that come up in an exam. So, well, that's great. I'm glad she's studying to be a paralegal. That's
good
that's
luck.
Awesome.
And maybe after that, onward to 1L. Who knows?
Hey, why not? You know, you might as well bill your time, Megan, because your bosses are going to be billing their time, and they're going to be billing your time and probably billing you out at three times the rate they charge, or three times the rate they pay you.
Exactly. That's how law firms work. Bill Rick, you have yourself a good afternoon, my friend.
Hey, you too, Bob. Thanks for letting me call in, and have a wonderful day. Hopefully you got good weather there.
It's been lovely. Just had a little pop-up shower today, and should be nice tomorrow, and hopefully I'll be on the air, and you'll be on the front porch.
All right. Sounds great. We'll talk tomorrow, Bob.
All right. Later, Bill. Billable.
Uh-huh.
Bye. And, Darlene says, I thought it was idiosyncratic, talking about balls and strikes, fall down, go boom. I remember it quite vividly. They were described as idiopathic pass outs. And idiopathic means we don't see it, we can't relate it to a disease process. So that's it. Thanks, everybody, for joining in. Thanks to all of our subscribers and a la carte contributors for keeping the program on the air. Thank you to all of you who participate in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20-plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. Remember, if you're doing business with Amazon, use smile.amazon.com, please, and nominate Coal River Mountain Watch to be a beneficiary of a portion of your purchase proceeds. Doesn't cost you any more, and it's a tremendous help, a little bit at a time, to Coal River Mountain Watch. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. There's a brand new fresh Malloy on the way for you. Come 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. Tune in here at HeadOn.live. And, chat it out in the chat room if you'd like to. And remember, as cases spike, as the disease spreads, stay home if you can. If you can't, maintain your social distance. Wear your masks, wear your gloves. And if you see a maggot coming toward you, avoid them like the plague. Because they are. Later.